right, well, let's open up our Bibles tonight to 2 Timothy chapter 2. We will get to that passage here just a little bit. 2 Timothy 2. And we're going to get back tonight into our study about the family, focusing on the family. And right now, of course, we are learning about raising our children. And we want to jump right back into that study tonight. So turn to 2 Timothy chapter 2. I have some good news for you. Before the service tonight, I cut my message in half. In fact, I didn't even bring half the notes up here with me. So I just realized there was no way I was going to cover all that ground. So anyway, I still have quite a bit of ground to cover, so let's just jump right into it, shall we? And tonight we're back into this third point, that if you want to raise your children right, which means to raise them to be godly, then you want to address the right issues in your parenting. And right now we are studying the issue of indolence, or slothfulness, or laziness, which is one of the things that we have to work on, the lives of our children. We have to work on that issue as a matter of sanctification, growth in grace and character, and all those things. Boy, I've got to get some water here. And last Sunday night, we talked about recognizing the symptoms of the sluggard. And tonight we're going to talk about remedying the situation of the sluggard. Just in case you forgot, here are the symptoms of the sluggard that we saw from the book of Proverbs: a lack of initiative, lateness in discharging duties, a love of sleep, lots of excuses, and a loathing for work. And now let's learn about how to do something about slothfulness in the lives of our children so that we can help them to form the godly character quality of diligence. And by the way, maybe we'll learn something that'll help us ourselves as well to work on that godly character quality of diligence. So, how do we remedy the situation of the sluggard? If you are contemplating some of those symptoms of slothfulness in the life of your child, how do you address these things? And so tonight I just want to give you some principles from Proverbs and some practical pointers to go along with them. And the first point is, if you want to remedy the situation of the sluggard in your home with your children, then number one, internalize personal diligence. Internalize personal diligence. What am I saying? I'm saying make sure that you are growing in the area of sanctification and godly character, in the area of diligence, so that you can model an example of diligence to your child. Folks, this is really where it begins, okay? This is where teaching begins. If you want to teach your child anything, you're going to have to model it for your child. In fact, the Apostle Paul talked about this even in talking to his own son in the faith, Timothy. He said to Timothy, "You have fully known my doctrine." But then he said, "You've also known my manner of life." And he goes on to give several other words that describe his manner of life. And so Paul said to Timothy, "Not only have I taught you the right thing, but I have showed you the right example. I've lived the right kind of a life before you." And this is very important if we want to teach something to our children. Proverbs 20 verse 7 says, "The just man walketh in his integrity. His children are blessed after him." And so if you want your kids to be diligent, then they need to see you as a parent demonstrating integrity and diligence in your own life. They need to see that you are a hard worker, that you are a self-motivated worker, that you are punctual and prompt, that you are not a procrastinator, that you can get yourself out of bed in the morning, that you know how to use your time wisely, and so on. Proverbs chapter 23 and verse 26 says, "My son, give me thine heart, and let thine eyes observe my ways." You know, I think that's one of the most important verses about parenting in the book of Proverbs. We cannot underestimate the power and importance of our personal example in teaching our children things. Reminds me of what not to do. I've used this illustration before, but I'll just throw it in here one more time, okay? Years ago when I was working at a Christian school in Georgia, a young man was caught smoking in the restroom, and of course, he got into trouble for that with the school administration, and he was sitting there in the office, and they were having a meeting with his mother. His mother was a chain smoker, by the way, and she turns to her son, and she says to him, "How many times do I have to tell you not to do what I do, but to do what I say?" Well, that doesn't really work too well. To tell your child, "Don't do what I do, do as I say." And the book of Proverbs says, "No, my son, observe my ways. Look at what I do and imitate my example." And so, first of all, if you want to teach your child about not being lazy and not giving in to the temptation, the natural fleshly temptation to indolence or slothfulness, then you need to show a personal example, which means that you need to, first of all, internalize these truths that we're learning from the Word of God. But then we could go on from there, and we also have some instructing to do. So number two, we need to instruct children in the value of several things. Now tonight I'm only going to get to the first one, okay? We need to instruct children in the value of hard work and punctuality. Hard work and punctuality. Now I'm saying instruct children, but please understand that instructing includes inspecting. Right? As they say, you have to inspect what you expect. By the way, that's a principle of teaching. You know, if you're going to be a teacher, say in a classroom, and you're working with students and you're teaching them things, then one of the things that you have to do as a part of teaching is called assessment. That's where you hear back from the student to find out, did they learn anything? Or was I just, you know, spouting out a bunch of hot air? So not only do we have to do the instructing, but we also have to do the inspecting. We have to make sure that it's being implemented in their lives. So we want to learn about that, and specifically in this area of hard work and punctuality. Proverbs chapter 10, verse 5 says, "He that gathereth in summer is a wise son, but he that sleepeth in harvest is a son that causeth shame." All right, so a slothful person is shamefully sleeping when he should be out working. On the other hand, the diligent person is out working while the sluggard is still in bed. That's the description that we have here in this verse. All right, so what does this diligent, this wise son do? Well, first of all, he's out there gathering in crops. Okay, so he's out there harvesting crops. And harvesting is hard work. But secondly, notice he is also working punctually because he's out there gathering in summer. Okay, so he's up and at 'em. He gets right to that work of harvesting when the job needs to be done, and he gets the job in time. You know, when you're harvesting things, you have a certain window of time in which to gather in your crops before the winter sets in and so forth. And if you've ever done any harvesting by hand, you know that is very hard work. Actually, my first job ever was picking produce for a farmer in our church in Michigan. And so I'll never forget I didn't do that for a long time, but it was hard work. My first assignment was to pick strawberries, 30 cents a quart. And I was told I can make a bundle of money. Just had to pick them fast, right? So I went out there, and I worked about 8 or 9 hours in the blazing hot summer sun, bent over at the waist the whole time. I made $9, I think it was. $1 an hour. Even back in the 80s, that was pretty poor pay. But man, that was hard work. I mean, I went home so sore. And then after that, I was given a job harvesting raspberries. And that was better because they grew up on bushes, you know. So you didn't have to spend the whole time bent over. Boy, I got paid 65 cents a quart for those raspberries. I was moving up to the big time. Of course, they're a lot smaller, so it took a lot longer to fill the court. And I also picked some currants. That was kind of interesting and didn't do a lot of that. And I also picked some tomatoes. But, you know, harvesting by hand is hard work. I mean, that's a good way to work hard. In fact, you could even say that's backbreaking work. So again, what is this diligent son, this wise son, what is he doing? He's out there picking produce in the fields. He's harvesting in the crops by hand. He's getting the job done, but he's also out there at the right time getting the job done before the opportunity is lost. That is the wisdom of diligence that God commends to us in His Word. It's the wisdom of the ant that we talked about last week, that God sets up for the example to the slothful person. Go to the ant, He says. You know, the ant doesn't waste any time getting the job done, and neither should we. Proverbs chapter 30 and verse number 25 is another verse about the ant. This verse says, "The ants are a people not strong, yet they prepare their meat in the summer." So again here, not just once in the book of Proverbs, but twice in the book of Proverbs, God holds up to us the ant as an example of hard, diligent, timely work for us to follow. When it says the ants are people not strong, that means that they are not strong in relation to other creatures because they're little teeny tiny. Okay, now they are strong for their size, but they're not strong in relation to other creatures. So they can't just go out and, you know, and take whatever food they want from other creatures. They're not at the top of the food chain, so to speak, in getting first pick of the best food. They can't drive all the other creatures away from the water hole or whatever. In fact, ants are easily crushed underfoot, right? You'd hardly ever think about them, and yet God thinks about them, and He says, think about the ant, okay? There are people not strong. They don't have a lot going for them in terms of getting food. They're also not strong in relation to the cold. So they have to compensate for their lack of size and strength through their diligence. And let's just point out three things that our children and all of us should take away from the example of the diligence of the ants in this verse right here, Proverbs 30 and verse 25. First of all, think about their hard work. And that's in the word prepare. They prepare their meat. You know, food doesn't come to the ants. Food doesn't come walking up to the ant hill and down one of the little tunnels and say, "Here I am, please eat me." No, the ants have to go out and prepare their food. Okay, they're scavengers, they're foragers. They work hard to find and to provide sufficient food for themselves. Some ants will travel up to 700 feet away from their colony in search of food. You know, that's like a trip of several miles for a person. So first of all, they work hard. Okay, they prepare their food. They don't wait for somebody to come and bring it to them. Secondly, they are self-motivated. Consider their self-motivated work. We see that in two words in the verse, the words they and their. And so nobody has to tell the ants to go out and find food. Nobody has to say, "You should do this. You'd better get busy, ants, because winter's coming." No, they go out and take care of their own food. Okay, they're self-motivated. They don't have to be told. Nobody has to crack a whip over them. They just go out and they get the job done. They are self-starters in this area of work, hard work. And then third, think about their timely work. It says they gather it, they prepare it in the summer. So they go out and find food when it can be found. The word summer here refers to the warm season as opposed to the winter. Sometimes in other verses, this word is used as a synonym for the harvest time. So it is that warm season of the year, that season of the year when crops grow and are harvested. And so the idea there in this verse is that ants go out and forage for food when it can be found. And they gather it up. Most ants gorge themselves in the fall on food. Some store food in their nests, and then they hibernate through the winter, and they sleep through the winter. And then guess what they do when the weather warms back up? They go back out, and they start gathering in more food. They go back to work. They get busy. Okay, so in these three ways, the ants give us this God-given illustration from the world of nature about the character quality of diligence that we should be cultivating in our own lives and that we should be teaching to our children. In this area of hard work means that you work hard, it means that you are self-motivated, and it means that you are timely in getting the job done. That's what we want to do. Now, Proverbs 16, verse 26 tells us the end result that we're looking for when we're working with our children in this area of hard work. It says, "He that laboreth, laboreth for himself, for his mouth craveth it of him." So basically that verse says the people who work hard do so because they are internally motivated. They have internal motivation. And yes, maybe you can make somebody work hard by cracking the whip over them, at least when you're right there standing over them and making them work hard, but they'll stop working as soon as the whip cracking stops unless they have this internal motivation. On the other hand, people that labor, as it says in this verse, people who labor all by themselves do so because they're aware of a need. They know they have a need, and they work hard to meet that need. They realize, as the verse says here, that if they don't work, they won't eat. And so their appetite urges them on. The need urges them on. They know they've got to go out there and get the job done, or they will go hungry. Self-motivation. Now, please understand also, we're talking about being self-motivated to work hard. We're not talking about a sinful, selfish type of motivation. Okay? We're talking about an appropriate personal motivation because the person who is working hard realizes that he or she has a stake in the outcome. This person has skin in the game, so to speak, that my well-being depends upon my hard work. And therefore, that person is willing to sacrifice ease in the moment from the greater benefits that will accrue to that person in the future as a result of that hard work. So what I'm saying is a diligent person is a self-starter who understands the concept of deferred gratification. Now, children don't naturally understand the concept of self-gratification. I'm sorry, of deferred gratification. No, they understand self-gratification just fine. They don't understand deferred gratification, okay? They have to learn that, okay? So this is part of working with our children over time, developing this character within them and helping them to understand that hard work in the present yields a greater benefit in the future. That's how we instill that internal drive to work. Now, you might be thinking right about now, you know, we're talking about this internal drive to work hard. Maybe you're thinking to yourself, I just don't have that, you know. So I guess, you know, God just didn't give me an internal drive to work, so I guess I'm off the hook, right? It doesn't mean I have to work, right? Because I'm not self-motivated. I mean, it doesn't just come naturally to me to work hard. And so are you off the hook? No. Because the internal motivation to work diligently is a heart issue. And God is in the heart-changing business. So yes, the foolishness that is bound in the heart of the child will, that desire to please self in the moment, that's immaturity, okay? And that's the nature of the flesh, to desire to be at ease and to not work hard and to take the path of the least resistance. And folks, part of our job as parents is to not allow our children to take the path of least resistance, but rather to allow them to learn about the adversity and the difficulty involved with hard work so that they can learn to benefit from that work in their lives. So what is called for is internal transformation. If we will renew our minds in the Word and humbly seek God's grace to change and grow, then we can learn to be self-motivated in our work by the grace of God. If you as a parent will work diligently with your child, and you will continue to teach and instruct them and model for them these principles of hard work and diligence and self-motivation, being punctual and timely and getting work done, they can learn it. Now, it's not going to happen overnight. It has to be taught. It has to be worked on over the years. But what is the result of this, okay? I think we have a great picture in the last part of Proverbs about another example and portrait of a hard worker in Proverbs. It's in Proverbs 31, and of course this is the portrait of the virtuous woman. Remember, the word virtue literally means strength. Okay, so the virtuous woman is a woman of strength. Strength, first of all, of character, internal strength. Because she's godly, because she loves the Lord, she loves God's Word. And we see her strength coming out in all kinds of ways in Proverbs chapter 31. But I just want to show you a couple of verses there from Proverbs 31. Verse 15 says, "She riseth also while it is yet night, and giveth meat to her household, and a portion to her maidens." Verse 18 says, "She perceiveth that her merchandise is good, her candle goeth not out by night." Boy, what a great example there for all of us. The virtuous woman, that woman of strength, is self-motivated and timely in her work. And so here we see that even as she has to lose some sleep, she's up in the middle of the night getting a job done when it needs to be done so that it can benefit her family, so that she can complete a task on time. And that's what we desire when we're working with our children and we're seeking to instill within them godly character. We want them to come to understand that hard work is something that God requires of people in this fallen world. And no, it may go against the grain of their desire for the path of the least resistance and to take it easy and to relax and to not work hard. But folks, as good parents, we can't just let our kids live there and stay there. We have to instruct, teach, inspect what we're instructing. We have to work with them from the Word. We have to help them to understand the importance of diligence as a character of godly virtue, so that when they become adults, when they are grown men and grown women, they are exemplifying the kind of godly character that we see here in Proverbs 31. Of a woman who has internalized the value of labor, and she is up and she's working hard, really as a demonstration of her love for the people in her life. Now, I want to give you some practical pointers then, if I could, on how to teach hard work and punctuality to children, okay? And then I'll make a couple final applications. But let me just give you a few practical pointers. I'm going to try to do this with each of these points. And so I hope this will just be a practical development of these principles that we're learning here. So if you want to teach hard work and punctuality, number one, be hardworking and punctual yourself. That's where it starts, right? By internalizing these qualities for ourselves so that our children can see them in us, so that then they can imitate that example. Because more is caught than is taught. Which is why when Paul said to Timothy, "You've known my doctrine," he followed that up with, I believe, 8 words to describe his manner of life. 1 word for the teaching, the instructing, and 8 words for the example. So be hardworking and punctual yourself. Okay, and then number 2, assign children age-appropriate tasks in their daily routines. So children can start learning how to work from a very early age, and they should. So when they're very little, that probably is going to begin with something like cleaning up their own toys. You know, learning about the joy of cleaning up. That's joyful, amen. I didn't hear too many amens on that, but they should have responsibilities to maintain their own bedrooms, for example. They should then, at a certain point, they're old enough to begin to do household chores. And they should have responsibilities that are entrusted to them in the family. And then eventually, perhaps they're old enough to do some yard work and start mowing grass or whacking weeds or, you know, putting in a hard day's work, pulling weeds or things like that. They need to learn how to work on their bikes or work on cars or the mower or helping with other kinds of work and, you know, things around the house, indoors, outdoors, whatever it may be. But this is a part of good parenting, is to intentionally assign children responsibilities that they are expected to do so they can learn from an early age that work is a part of life, that everybody in this family works, and that the purpose of mom's existence is not to clean up after you, okay? But you are responsible to clean up after yourself. So we want to assign age-appropriate tasks and ask children to contribute. You know, this is a problem in our society today because a lot of parents think that they're being a bad parent if they make their children work. That they're being somehow a bad parent if they allow their children to experience any kind of adversity, any kind of difficulty, including the difficulty of work. And so some parents think, hey, my job as a parent is to give my kid a wonderful life where they never have to lift a finger to do anything, and that's not being a good parent. Being a good parent is getting your children working so they can understand that life is about work. Remember, work predated the fall. Work is not evil, right? God created work before Adam and Eve ever sinned. He gave them, Adam and Eve, delightful work to do in the garden. And I'm looking forward to when I get to heaven, I'm going to be able to grow things up there. Trees, plants, I mean, they're not going to have to, you know, they're not going to die on me and fail to produce fruit or whatever. And man, it's going to be awesome. I can't wait. So, you're not being a bad parent by making your child learn how to work. That's being a good parent, okay? And then number three, teach children how to use tools. Okay, when it becomes appropriate, then, that's something I think that, you know, you need to be intentional about, particularly as kids start getting older and they're able to start using adult-style tools or whatever it may be, whatever, if it's a kitchen utensil or some, a wrench or whatever it is. You know, you're showing them the tool, you're teaching them how to use that tool so that they can develop a skill that they can use to work hard in their lives. Okay? And then here's another one. This, I think, is very important. Involve children in activities where their capacities will be stretched. Involve children in activities where their capacities will be stretched. What kinds of activities am I talking about? I'm not just talking about work activities, but this could be organized sports. Because when you get involved in organized sports, you start learning that, you know what, some things worth doing in life are hard work. I mean, we're not just playing on the playground here. I mean, the coach is making me run laps, and the coach is making me, you know, get in shape, I'll tell you a little story, okay? I've always loved the game of soccer, and so I started playing soccer in seventh grade, my school in Alabama. Then we moved to Michigan, and as I recall, we didn't have a soccer team my first year there. But the next year, we started a soccer team at that school. Man, everybody was excited, but I was really excited because I've always loved the game of soccer. Well, our coach had never really coached soccer before. He didn't really know a lot about the game of soccer, but he did have one idea in mind, which was that we needed to be toughened up. And so our soccer field was had just been recently converted from crop ground right behind the church. it tended to be very muddy. And we also had this sledding hill that was kind of across that section from the church. It was over on the, it was about a mile and a half, 2 miles away from the church. And it was a man-made sledding hill. It was a pretty tall hill. It had pretty steep sides. But he loved to take us over to that hill, make us run up that hill. And it was so steep, you really couldn't run down it, especially when it was muddy and wet and raining. And so you kind of slid down on your belly down this sledding hill. It was muddy. And then he had this drill where, you know, he'd say, up and running. So we'd be running in place. And then he'd say, hit the dirt. So we'd hit the dirt. Then he'd say, up and running. And, of course, that dirt was often kind of muddy dirt. And then he would say, up and running. Then we'd get up and run and hit the dirt. And we'd be down. And, you know, we complained an awful lot about his coaching style. But one thing he was teaching us was he was stretching us beyond our known capacities. He was taking us beyond our comfort zone. That was a good thing. He was teaching us about the fact that, you know, if you're going to grow in your life, you got to learn to be pushed beyond where you are comfortable. And that's what hard work is all about, right? It's about going beyond where you're comfortable. So it might be organized sports. That would be good. Maybe it's sessions of work around the house, long sessions of hard work. I will never forget one time this view of my two sons, Justin and Jonathan. We had a heavy snowfall, and I decided that we were going to shovel the driveway by hand. I used to shovel it by hand back in those days. So I took the two boys out, and I said, we're going to shovel it. I have a pretty long driveway, and we're going to shovel this by hand. So we're working on this thing, and, you know, we were, I don't know, about halfway into the project. And I turned around, and my two boys were just splayed out on the snow like that. They were wiped. So, and I had a lot of snow left to shovel, and I knew I couldn't do it all myself. So this is where a little incentive came in. And I told them that if they worked hard and helped me finish off that driveway, that I would take them both to Burger King for a double Whopper meal. Man, they were back up. See, before I mentioned a double Whopper at Burger King, they thought they had been stretched to the limit. But then they found they actually had a little bit more left in reserve. And they learned something about hard work. And by the way, I thought that was a good motivator, because I think you do need to understand that when you work hard, there is a reward. As the Bible says, the laborer is worthy of his hire. So it might be just hard work around the house. And honestly, this is one reason why I'm thankful that we live on some property, because it has been a wonderful opportunity to teach my kids about hard work, because it takes a lot of work to maintain some property. And so we, you know, sometimes we're working hard long, you know, last fall and this summer, we've been working on installing some drain lines off of the gutters around our house. And so we've run four lines, and I think about 500 feet altogether, somewhere in that neighborhood. And we dug it all by hand. And I say we because I did help. But my boys did an awful lot of that work, and you know, so we trenched it out, and we got the pick, and we picked it deeper, and got through some clay, and it was a lot of hard work, and taking us beyond the normal. But that's okay, because that's what life is about. It's about working hard and being pushed beyond the normal boundaries. And so you want to expose your kids to some things. Now, you don't want to be some kind of a cruel taskmaster, you know, and your child is dying of thirst or something, and, well, I don't care, you don't get any water. I'm not talking about that, okay? But I am talking about having the wisdom to stretch them on purpose. Let's see. It could be later on that you get them a summer job I think that's a good thing to do if that opportunity presents itself. And, you know, be willing to drive them to work if need be, so that, I know it's going to be inconvenient in your schedule, but you're giving them an opportunity to learn the value of hard work. So make sure that you're involving your kids in activities where their capacities will be stretched. Now, are they going to complain when they're stretched? You better believe it. But again, good parenting isn't just giving in to the complaining. It's not just letting your children take that fleshly path of ease, of the least resistance. It's helping them to learn there's a better road that involves hard work. Finally, insist that children accomplish tasks in a timely fashion. So I think that means that, you know, you should have start times and end times for tasks and then hold them to it, okay? So what I'm saying is that kids need to learn how to function under deadlines. It's very important because most of life is about functioning under deadlines. Many of you have jobs. You go out and you have deadlines. And most of my life I've been dealing with deadlines. I started out, my first job was working as a writer for Rebecca Book, a freelance writer. I actually wrote for them for 3 years, and it was all about deadlines. I got tired of deadlines, you know, I got to meet a deadline. And then I got another job, and guess what? It was about deadlines. And then I got a different job, and it was about deadlines. It's always about deadlines. And so part of learning how to work hard in life is learning how to function under a deadline, how to get a job done in a timely fashion. And so give them some tasks to do. Make sure they're age-appropriate tasks. But with those tasks, give a time frame and then hold them accountable to the time frame. In fact, I was talking to my wife about this. She suggested even another good thing to do is not just to give your child one task at a time, but give them a series of tasks so that they also have to manage themselves in the accomplishment of that work, and that you're not just, you know, spoon-feeding it to them one little step at a time. I mean, you have to do that with a little child, but as kids grow, then you shouldn't still be, you know, spoon-feeding them, now go make your bed, you know, and now let's wash the dishes. But you should be able to lay it out, and they should have responsibility that involves accountability. So those are just some practical pointers for you tonight on teaching children about hard work and punctuality. But let me just ask you a couple of questions as we turn our attention tonight to 2 Timothy chapter number 2 for just a moment as I close here, okay? Let me ask you tonight, first of all, the young people here, the children here tonight, let me ask you, are you learning this character quality, a godly character quality of diligence? Are you learning about hard work? Are you applying yourself to the task, getting the job done in a timely fashion? Are you mature enough to work hard without a need of mom or dad to stand over you and crack that whip, so to speak, you know, without them having to tell you what to do every little step of the way and making sure that you're getting the job done? Are you learning to work hard on your own? And then let me ask you, parent, are you teaching your children to be self-motivated in their work? So that ability to work without external coercion is a critically important life skill. And they're going to need that, whatever kind of work they're going to do in life. But it's also a critically important skill in the work of the kingdom of God. Because God is looking for faithful servants who will work hard while the master is away. The parable of the talents, the parable of the pounds, they both describe the master going away into a far country and leaving his servants with responsibilities. And he said, after giving to every man his work, he said, occupy till I come. That word occupy means make the most of the work that I've given to you. Okay, be busy about my business. Fill it up to the fullest. Make it go to the maximum. And be self-motivated. Be diligent until I come. And our Master, the Lord Jesus Christ, also encourages his servants with promises of rewards. He allows us as His servants to have skin in the game, that when we're working for the Master, that there is a reward that comes with that. You know, God doesn't have to do that. It's like me taking my boys to Burger King for the double Whopper. I mean, I didn't have to do that, right? I could have just said, boys, you're going to get this done. But I allowed them to have some reward. And so I want to just show you tonight these verses in 2 Timothy chapter 2 as I close, okay? Take a look beginning at verse number 3. Paul says to Timothy, thou therefore endure, what's the next word? Hardness as a good soldier of Jesus Christ. You know what? Being a soldier of Jesus Christ involves hardness. Yeah, I've never been a soldier. I've never been in the armed services. I've talked to guys who have served. I remember, we had some friends and we lived in Savannah, Georgia. They had a Ranger battalion stationed there and had some friends who were Army Rangers. And they would tell us about some of their training, you know. Yeah, we went out into the swamp. We were out in the swamp all night. And, I mean, just kind of stuff. I'm like, man, I'm glad I was home in bed, you know. And these guys were out there. I mean, they were enduring hardness as good soldiers. You know, and then when the mortars start coming in, you know, dig your foxhole. You know, that's not a time to dilly-dally around. That's a time to work hard, right? I mean, there's hard work involved in being a good soldier. And Paul says to Timothy, that's what it means to be a good soldier of Jesus Christ. It means you have to endure hardness. Go on to the next verse. He says, no man that warreth entangleth himself with the affairs of this life, that he may please him who hath chosen him to be a soldier. Who are you supposed to be pleasing out there on that battlefield? Yourself? No. You're serving a great commander. Now, if you're in war, and you're fighting this pitched battle, and over here is this little town or this little village, and, you know, it looks kind of nice, you know, little houses, little smoke rising from the chimneys, and you're just thinking about the fact that over there in that town, there are some people that are just living normal life, and they're having a good time, and, boy, they probably have some restaurants there. They probably have some nice coffee shops in that town, and so, you know, I think I'm just going to take a break from the battle, and I'm going to go over into that little town and just have a good time for a while. Is that allowed if you're a soldier? No. That's what Paul says. If you're in the battle, you don't entangle yourself in the affairs of this life. You're not on your own time. You're pleasing your master. That's what your life is all about if you're a Christian. Now let's go on to the next verse. Verse 5 says, and if a man also strive for masteries, yet is he not crowned except he strive lawfully. Here Paul changes the analogy to another kind of hard work. This is somebody who is contending for a prize in the competition. This is athletic competition. You think about the Olympics. I mean, if you want the gold medal, man, you're going to have to work hard. Striving for masteries. That's hard work. Think about all the training involved. Think about how far these athletes have to push themselves to be at the very top of the game. They're striving for those masteries, but Paul says you got to strive lawfully. That means you got to play by the rules if you want to win the prize. It doesn't matter how long of a baseball, you know, hit you get, how many times it bounces around the outfield, and how many times, you know, you run around the bases and you come all the way home. If you miss first base, guess what? It doesn't count. Got to play by the rules. And so God says, if you want the prize, there's a prize. But you got to play by the rules. Got to strive by the rules, okay? So that's important for us to understand. And now let's take a look at this next verse, which is where I kind of wanted to land. He says, the husbandman that laboreth must be first partaker of the fruits. Now there is a third analogy for hard work. So we've had the soldier, we've had the athlete, and now we have the farmer, the husbandman. And so here's a husbandman that's laboring. We were talking about, you know, working hard in the fields to get started here tonight. And remember, they were doing it by hand, okay? And so here's this farmer, and he's out there, and he's working hard in the fields, and he is laboring in those fields to produce a crop that will bring forth fruit that's worth harvesting. And so he's put all of his blood and sweat and toil into that crop, and God promises a reward. He said, the husbandman that laboreth, gets to be first partaker of the fruits. Folks, again, Paul here is talking about our service for Jesus Christ. We need to understand that working for Christ is hard work. And it's what we're called to do as believers. And so, do you understand the importance here tonight? We've been talking about the importance of teaching children, the value of hard work and punctuality and all those things. Folks, the value here is not just so they can be successful making a living, although that's a good thing. But there is an eternal value. Because God is looking for people who will work hard for the sake of His kingdom. And that's the standard that we are given. He's going to hold us accountable. But He says, you're a soldier. You're the athlete striving. And you're the farmer working in the fields. But if you will do the work, if you will work hard, if you will be faithful, you will be first partaker of the fruits. Boy, that's a wonderful promise. What are the fruits? The fruits are the many personal benefits that come from working hard for the Lord Jesus Christ. Specifically in the gospel, in the work of the Great Commission. That means you get to personally enjoy the fruits of your labor in the Lord. So here on earth, you get to be right there when a soul gets saved. Man, that's exciting. What a wonderful blessing to be there when God saves a soul. To be in on that. You get to be right there when victories are being won in people's lives. You know, it's amazing that God allows us to serve Him. But it's also amazing that He rewards His servants in so many ways. Boy, there are all kinds of rewards here on earth. The Bible details out those rewards, multiplies our seed sown, and all those other things. He allows us to have skin in the game, and it's His game, so to speak. And then, of course, ultimately, the rewards are handed out at the judgment seat of Christ to those who are faithful servants, to those who hear the words, well done. You know, well done implies that you did something. It implies that you worked, that you made an effort, that you put in the striving that was required for the master so that he can commend you for your faithfulness and service. But if we want to hear the well done, if we want to be first partaker of the fruits, we have to put in the work. We have to be the husbandman that laboreth. Just seems like a lot of times people today want something for nothing, right? And I'm afraid that even in the spiritual realm, perhaps we want to win the crowns, but we don't really want to strive for those crowns. I think it'd be good for us all just to kind of meditate tonight on the fact that what's called for in our Christian lives as believers is diligence, self-motivation, being self-starters in the work of the Lord, and strong finishers. Like the Apostle Paul, who could say, I have finished my course. As Hebrews chapter 12 tells us, that we would run with patience the race that is set before us, keeping our eyes on that prize. Like the Apostle Paul said, I press toward the mark for the prize of the high calling of God in Christ Jesus. Folks, God has given us wonderful promises of blessings and rewards for our hard work for Him. But where are God's hardworking servants going to come from in this age? I think they're going to come from Christian homes, Christian families, and Christian parents who teach their children about the virtue of diligence in hard work, in punctuality, in self-motivation. And not just so that they can live for themselves, but so they can work for the master. Remembering that our goal is not to please ourselves, but the one who called us to be a soldier. You are soldiers. You are athletes. And you are husbandmen. And the husbandman that laboreth must be. Doesn't say he might be. He must be. That's a promise from God. He must be first partaker of the fruits. Let's bow our heads, and next Sunday night we'll continue on and we'll talk about some of these other principles of instructing our children spiritually.